You are listening to the Green Lantern Spotlight Podcast, episode number 54 for May 30th, 2010.
Of the brand new day in the Green Lantern mythos. We dive into the mysteries of the brightest day and the White Lantern, as well as introduce you to the all-new Green Lantern Honor Guard. I'm your host, Frankie Mateo. Joining me are Brandon West, the co-webmaster of the speedster site, ProBoards.com, Kuhan, the creator of the Realview Mirror podcast. We also have the ever-presentable Musard, as well as the uniquely minded Eric on his views on comic culture, and of course, our sponsor and creator of the GreenLanternCore.com, Andrew NDB. How's everyone?
Yo, Diggity D Dog, what up?
I feel like I got skipped. Did I get skipped?
No, you didn't get skipped. You were first, Brest.
What more do you want, Brest?
Did you just call me Brest? It's a combination between Brandon and West. It's halfway between Brandon and West. It makes sense.
I think you just totally nailed that one, Kuhan. Sorry, Brest. That's what's happening.
That's what's
happening.
I'm going
to say I'm unique, Frankie. I feel like it's an insult.
We are all going to call him Breast
now.
I said
uniquely minded. I didn't say unique.
Well, also, like, I feel like somebody who just, like Hitler was uniquely minded and the Mole Man is unique.
Yeah, I know. That makes you stand out above the crowd.
Yeah, there's plenty.
On the bodies of, like, the dead.
Wait, hold on.
Culture geeks are traveling over in their dreams, yes.
Let it be known that Eric is the one who compared himself to Hitler, not Frankie.
Yes.
Eric is
the Mole Man.
Let the record show.
I also let the record show that we also have a bit of news that has not been reported. Hollywood Reporter has now confirmed the Green Lantern animated series. To read the little expert that's going on, Cartoon Network is planning a Green Lantern animated series. Phil Kent, chairman and CEO of Time Warner's network unit, showed a slide with some Cartoon Network's original program, which is about to be aired. And one of the slides was actually the Green Lantern animated series. Warner Brothers chairman and CEO Barry Mayer later in the day mentioned this as an example of increasing collaboration and coordination between his unit and Turner. He said that Cartoon Network show is based on the DC comic character and Warner's Green Lantern movie, scheduled for June 17, 2011 release. The TV series is expected to launch the second year after the film is actually finished being released. What do we believe this now, seeing that we're actually going to get a Green Lantern series 2 years after the actual movie comes out?
I'll believe it when it happens. Not that I don't think it's going to happen, because it's something they should be doing anyway. Why would they be contingent on the film?
I mean, it's something they've been talking about for years and years and years. I mean, and the movie is finally giving it that last push to get it out the door. I'm just a little bit worried that it might be too tied into the movie universe. Which I guess wouldn't be too concerning if I knew that the movie was gonna rock, but I don't know yet. So
yeah, they're pretty much hinging on the fact that the series is gonna probably appear and adhere to a newer audience rather than the old audience such as we. So it's gonna probably just gonna be for the ones who finish seeing Ryan Reynolds show his stuff on the silver screen.
Well, those people and the Geoff Johns kids.
Okay. Brandon, what were you gonna say?
Basically
mute.
Breast, what are you gonna say?
Let's keep him abreast.
I'm going to make this work. Has there been a cartoon series that spin off of a movie?
I think Spider-Man was supposed to.
Spider-Man spin-off.
Wasn't that Spider-Man CGI cartoon kind of?
The MTV series that lasted for about
and
a season.
And then technically, really? The Iron Man movie isn't, the Iron Man TV show wasn't, but it did appear after the movie.
We're not saying it's going to be a spin-off.
It appeared after, but it's not necessarily a spin-off of the movie.
Well, it's not going to be a spin-off, but it's going to tie into the movie universe. Like, if the mythos changes, it's going to deal with the movie mythos.
Batman the Animated Series, when it started, obviously it's not in the movie universe of the Burton movies, but like it was...
Well, yeah, eventually...
Playing, it, was, It was certainly playing off of that that vibe.
Yeah, it was mandated to have similar designs, and the music was exactly the same and stuff. So.
Yep.
Well, it was Danny Elfman who did most, the opening for that.
Yeah, well, 2 years after the movie drops, we won't have to worry about whatever happened in that Ryan Reynolds flick. I mean, whether that's good or bad.
You know who I haven't heard from? I haven't heard from you.
The movie, the series. This is a question. Is it going to be good? That's
okay,
what I want
to
know.
Okay, now let's go on to... No, sorry. Keep going.
I'm not sure if this is going to be a good thing because I'm not sure what direction they're going to take this in. I mean, I'm hopeful that it's going to be good. It could be good. That all depends on if they're going to go for something more along the lines of what we fans would like as a comic thing, or something just more simple and easy and easy to market. You know, something safe. Not exactly taking risks.
I don't think we know enough yet to speculate enough. Like, you know, if they get a good voice or versus a terrible voice, if they get a good producer or a good writing staff versus a terrible writing staff, like it could deal with a terrible premise or something. Like, if the movie is terrible and the show is, you know, building off the movie, the show could still be great.
Depends. Well, either way,
I was saying, we don't know what's going to happen.
I feel like this is a symptom of what we talked about a couple times with the kind of overhyping, you know? And it's interesting to see that the other announcements were like, oh, if the Green Lantern movie does well, we might Green Lantern Wonder Woman movie. We might. It's like, as far as I understand, as being a hardcore fan of DC for the last few years, every year they're saying it's guaranteed we're going to get this movie. Every year they're saying it's guaranteed we're going to get a Flash movie with David Goyer at the end of the year. Don't even worry about it. And yet now all of a sudden it's like they might be greenlit. I mean, I feel like this is, and since DC, obviously their entertainment management just changed over, I feel like this is finally honest stuff, but it's still the same bullshit they're always saying. Like, hey, kids, you might eventually get that sort of movie. It's like, fuck it, that's barely even news, you know? I mean, 2 years after the movie drops next year.
And then you always read about, oh, yeah, we're discussing a new Superman movie. We're discussing a Superman movie this year, and next year they're going to discuss it some more. I mean, it's just icebergs moving around in the fucking ocean.
It's like 1997 all over
again. It's not news.
Maybe they'll finally start writing it within 3 years.
It's almost as if we don't have the internet to find things out way in advance. It's like, you know, like 10 years, like 10, like 9, 10 years ago, or like 15 years ago, before everything was all over the internet. It's like that. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, you ever go to the movies and you see a trailer for a movie that you definitely knew was coming out because you're like conscious of the internet, and then someone next to you is like, I can't believe they're making a Prince of Persia movie like a week before it comes out. You're like, what a fucking idiot.
Yeah, like you're sitting next to them.
That's
like,
a bit harsh to say. I'm sorry.
No, they're a fucking idiot. In all fairness, though, it seems really awful that we live in a society where that person's a fucking idiot. Because they really should be. What's the point of the trailer, you know? Because really, what's the point of the trailer if not to let people know that the movie's out there? And if you're a fucking idiot because you don't know what's out there, then why are you doing a trip?
Well, or when I'm sitting next to my friend watching The Losers, and I'm like, hey, that guy's going to be Captain America, just so you know.
Yeah, I do that all the time.
I hate people
do that. Watching Sherlock Holmes, that's Sinestro. Who?
Yes!
Well, my favorite thing is people do it.
Or Kick-Ass.
That's going to be Hector Hammond.
Yeah, or watching Mel Gibson, The Edge of Darkness. Like, yeah, the director of this, he's directing Green Lantern.
my favorite people do that to me, and then I'm like, yeah, people do that to me, and I'm like, you're a fucking idiot. I knew that, you stupid fool.
Oh, I know that guy who died in the beginning of Star Trek was becoming Thor.
I'm like, of course he is, you idiot.
That news broke like 2 months ago.
This happens all the time with like one of my friends. Also.
That news broke like 3.5 hours ago. Come on.
Yeah, you fool.
I saw that Twitter like fucking.
Does a lot. Every time we want to talk about Green Lantern news, like, hey, they cast this guy. He's like, nah, they cast him last week. We shouldn't talk about that. We're like, what? Did we discuss that ever? I don't think we ever discussed. That's a good segue to discuss. I don't know if we ever discussed that Temuera Morrison is playing.
I love how Eric couldn't get through the joke. Like, I think it was because of Temuera Morrison.
You heard it here first, folks.
But about the cartoon, I think we're all kind of cautiously optimistic, right?
We're cautiously optimistic for the cartoon. I know Brandon is. He's going to be up board on this. I when Ozzy want to wait to see who's actually going to be producing this thing and directing it.
Marvel's animation has been pretty solid in all the product they put out in the last few years, so I'm not too worried about it. And this is really a property that should be a TV show and almost shouldn't be a comic. Yeah. You know, this should be a TV show.
I don't know, Eric. You say the last few years, sure, but like we just said, the entertainment hands all just changed.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
We have no clue what's going to happen now.
Well, it's cock true. On that. How about that? How about I just say cock on that?
Well, let's actually move on to what we're all here for. The two issues that came out recently, the Green Lantern 54 and Green Lantern Corps 48. So we're going to actually go right into that. I say that Green Lantern number 54 actually takes place right after the Events of Brightest Day number 1, so we all remember what happened
during
here.
The Events of Brightest Day number 1.
Yeah, during the Events
largely during.
The Brightest Day number
1. Yeah, largely
four
during.
Four pages!
Given back to the King Arthur analog.
Yeah, they even happened to the construct.
Something. We have to still see the visual imagery of this.
It's like Jesus fucking Christ when Jeff isn't like wasting space on like splash pages. He's recapping events from
No joke, he copy pasted the script. Like he even says, what in the Guardian's unspoken names is King Arthur? Excalibur or whatever.
It's like, did you not pay attention 3 seconds ago when we tried this already, Sinestro? He's like, sorry, I was not paying attention.
I was not paying attention at all to what you were saying, human. The funny thing that I have to say is that right after that little King Arthur analog analogy, they had to show the recently resurrected lanterns and have to blatantly point out the King of the Seas himself, Aquaman. Going like, who do we have to save? Aquaman? Arthur? Yeah, King Arthur. I got it. Shut up with this.
No, to be fair, that those four pages could be for somebody who isn't reading Brightest Day and is reading Lantern, which is almost nobody except for Frankie.
It's like the last fucking issue of Green Lantern. It's like it ended like on a cliffhanger that basically forces you to read Brightest Day number 1. And so you come back here for the next issue of GL, and it's like he's recapping it again. So it's like two times in a...
Yeah, right. The three pages that Hal Jordan had on Brightest Day number 1 are the same three pages from Green Lantern.
Yeah, it's like they fuck you at the end of the last issue. They fuck you in Brightest Day 1. They fuck you here again.
What I think is interesting.
Not many new pages of new content.
What I think is interesting. Well, in all fairness, this goes back to what we were talking about the last cast. Well, whether we thought us even talking about Brightest Day was made any sense. And I was of the argument that, you know what, there's certain things here that are clearly linking over to the Green Lantern titles. But I guess I might have been completely wrong.
No,
I mean, it might
not
matter at all.
Breast was right.
Breast was right.
I'm not gonna say Breast was right 100%. It's almost like Jeff Johns heard the cast and created this comic out of thin air just to prove Breast right about something.
Just to screw the rest of us over. He's like,
you know what else though? Okay, here's before we move on. I want to say one something really quick. What's really interesting about it is actually the art on the Doug Mank pages here are awesome. Like the pages where Hal's trying to pull the lantern up, those are really cool images, I thought.
The
Ivan Reyes images look like shit comparably. So the only thing that's really interesting about the layout is that it's kind of it comics 101. Like you read the two four pages together and you get one guy who does it kind of workmanlike, and you get a guy like Doug Mank. He's like, yeah, this is the fuck how you draw this. You know, that's great.
Yeah, you mean the Ivan Reyes pages in Brightest Day.
Yeah, yeah. Is it me or did the guy who last issue was chaining up all the entities look like a Guardian now? It didn't look like a Guardian last issue.
He looked like a Guardian from the start to me.
No,
exactly.
I guess I wasn't paying attention.
Short and stout and stubby little fingers.
Even
well, you know what? Mew, what do you think about them just yanking Sodomia out of the sun like that?
I think it was just a bit too convenient, personally. I mean, they just snatch him out like nothing. It's like
I like how they destroyed a story plot. I'm sorry.
I like how they promptly just killed off all those Daxamites in the middle of the
arbitrarily.
I liked it, actually. I liked that the overall judgment of the Daxamites, because that was something that was really bothering me from Pete Tomasi stuff. I was like, these are fascists that have superpowers. And then the guy was like, I agree with you, Eric. They're dead.
Just I'm dead.
I'm telling you, it's Apoli Apsa. We know this. Like, even in core, he's like, you know, Guardians take his name as bad.
This couldn't have been my chance.
We'll get there in a second.
I'm voting for a crunchy, tiny little version of Krona. I'm voting. I'm not thinking, but I'm voting that Krona is now fightingly regular Guardian size, and he's a little tiny Guardian. That's what I want.
Impossible.
The years have been both.
No, I mean, this isn't by chance. I mean, and Jeff made it a point to like purposely like say that Gantet is the only one that's ever taken a name, and now all of a sudden now it's Apoli Apsa. All of a sudden they're talking about Apoli Apsa. It's like, yeah, it's not for chance.
The mad Guardian.
He's the only one who took the name, except if you count that guy that we don't talk about anymore.
His nickname was Old Timer too. I mean, that's like this whole shtick so far.
How did you guys feel about finally seeing Atrocious use some constructs? Starting to
sort of lame.
Yeah,
irrelevant.
Wait, I missed
that's the crux. That's the the crux of the whole issue is like him making a construct. I mean, what else is there in here? It's just nonsense.
Lobo showed up. That's awesome.
The blatant disregard for humanity.
Why did Lobo show up for like no reason? Like he just pops. Find out next time on the Green Lantern.
This whole issue is like about tidbits and tie-ins from other stories. They take the Seldom Yacht story from Green Lantern Corps and then everything else from Friday's Day and.
The funniest thing to me is that, like, the best thing is, like, as you go through this issue, the inking progressively gets worse. Like, it was
I'll say it's that bad. I mean, there are certain parts.
It's not that bad. Like, it starts out kind of undetailed, and then I'm pretty sure the next, like, five pages are monkey pages, and then goes less detail again, and then by the time that you have, right before Atrocitus makes the construct, that page, he has, like... Look at this. Like, he's like, I learned things, Jordan, blah, blah, blah. There is no detail on his face. He is smooth as a baby's bottom.
And the page before that...
Like first page knowledge, absolutely.
A page before that, Hal Jordan's a rookie again. He has a white circle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he does.
All right,
come on. Seriously.
The issue itself was sort of entertaining. I'll wait to see what's going on with Lobo in the next issue. The artwork is still keeping me entertained. Doug Monkey still keeping me.
Monkey's art is good, and I like the colors. Although at some point, I'm the only person who ever noticed the colors for some reason. I don't know. Colors don't get any recognition. Come on, guys. But this like at some point the coloring is weird. I just want to chalk that up to this Gabe Altaib. I don't know how to pronounce this. Eltreb? Is this Eltreb? I don't know. Eltaib.
What did you?
This guy. It says the colors. It says Randy Mayer with Gabe Eltaib.
They probably did a few pages.
Oh, Gabe.
Yeah. So I think the few pages I didn't like were him. I'm just gonna say that because most of the time it's good, so I figured that's Mayer.
I think it's actually both of them. I think he probably just the assistant and had
a lot.
Yeah,
probably.
To do with it.
But there's probably some pages where I think the White Lantern. Maybe it's just because it's the White Lantern pages are like really bright and weird.
It's pronounced Trib.
I want to say I agree with Andrew that a lot of this was filler space. And while there are certain things I like,
color space.
It was a good looking issue, which almost like unfortunate that stuff's being wasted with Nike. But I mean, I did like that there was resolution to the Seldom Yacht thing, and I kind of for some reason like the idea that he's not Ion anymore, even though that kind of wastes the whole point of having a Superman Ion character. But
Well, I mean, he's still a Green Lantern,
and he's gonna be Ion again because he's still Ion in the 30th century.
If that future still
that could
exists,
that could be.
I just feel like I wonder why it has to happen here in Green Lantern. It's not even
Jeff's story.
Yeah, it's true.
He does this all the time, like the whole Mongol thing, which was like the Mongol thing was like the crux of Green Lantern Corps for years, and then all of a sudden Jeff is like, no, I'm going to resolve it in Green Lantern.
Jeff Johns sticks his grubby little fingers into everything. He's like, oh, he's like, oh, hey, Peter, you're writing a pretty good story. Can I have that? No. Oh, yeah. Okay, I'm taking it. Fuck you.
Do you mind if I foul it? Okay.
How can you be mad that Jeff is resolving it here when no one reading GL is not reading GLC or vice versa?
That's not true. There's plenty of people that are reading Core that aren't reading Green Lantern because they don't like they don't like Jeff Johns.
No, bullshit.
No, there are more people.
No, in all fairness, the opposite is true. Absolutely, there are people reading Green Lantern that aren't reading Core. That's totally true.
Both of them are true.
But that doesn't. But in all fairness, it's just because the stories intrinsically are standing on their own, and then I think Andrew's point is when they're resolved in Green Lantern, they're resolved in this kind of stopgap way that Jeff Johns resolves everything. I mean, it's not problematic that Seldom Yacht story was resolved for me in Green Lantern. It's problematic that it was resolved in three pages considering it was like a 9-month storyline. You know, in Mongol, same exact thing. He was the main antagonist of Tomasi's run, and he was taken out halfway through Blackest Night just because they wanted to get rid of that loose end, you know, and that's it's just the way it's done. I mean, if you had come in and put an ending on a Grant Morrison story that was a great writer, I wouldn't care that he ended the Grant Morrison story. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
I'm not even mad that they yanked out the Ion entity. I mean, we knew that's coming. Obviously, the whole thing about what's going on in Brightest Day is this dude going around collecting entities. I mean, of course, sooner or later they're going to get Ion, so fine. But I don't know.
We're gonna move on to the Core now. So we're gonna move on to the new creative team that actually started up on this book with. Yes. Tony Bedard, you know, one-time guest on our actual show, and twice-time guest on our show.
Yeah, that's right.
It was twice.
And and Andrew Saif, the new penciler for the Green Lantern Corps now. And I have to say, this book I don't find it so bad. I mean, for their beginning chapter, they're laying the groundwork for their new story arc, which isn't so bad.
I like Jon Stewart's. You can see his scruff. I like that he's a little bit like he hasn't shaved in a couple days. Anybody notice that?
I like that. Yes. I noticed that, but
like, I noticed that
on so many characters now. It's becoming.
It's
like
not going to be a look. I think it's.
No. I know. I don't think it's going to be a look. I just
don't know if it's worth talking about, but I did notice.
Are we gonna spend another hour on someone's hair?
So, Jon Stewart's scruff is definitely the most important thing to ever happen in comics.
I don't think it was nearly as great as Kyle Rayner's hair during Blackest Night.
Screw you.
On the art, I think I appreciate that he puts a lot of line work, and I do think he had some cool images here. It kind of clashes for me because I really got used to Gleason, but I think I got used to the way specifically Gleason was drawing stuff. Like, some things are overdrawn, I feel. But I do want to say I like the way he draws Atrocitus a lot, with the fact that his whole mouth is constantly exploding blood. It's like, it's funny because everybody who draws Atrocitus draws him very specifically, but none of them look at all alike, you know, and that's pretty interesting.
I like the way he draws John. Like, most people don't draw. The other thing is that Bedard isn't just shoving John to the back like John's did.
You know, yeah, he's pushing him very much into the forefront.
It seems like he's doing the opposite. Yeah, exactly. Kyle gets second billing now. Apparently,
Admittedly, John got but then again, John got more pages in this one issue than he got in Jeff Johns' entire run of Green Lantern.
John's face looks a little white to me. Like, he looks kind of like this. He looks kind of like more like, what's his name?
Frankie?
I was going to say Vance. I mean, he looks like, it doesn't look like he, I mean, not to say like he has that particularly white, but he just looks like, it doesn't look very John Stewart-y to me, I guess. But I mean,
I don't know, not quite
black enough, right?
Apparently, he's having trouble staying black.
It's not as bad as
that's all he has to do, you know.
Like, that was his problem in the first place, right?
Well, the way I see it is like the two figures that Andrew has used for John and the Hal and Kyle show, or actually have you used three now?
Yeah, counting the Guardian figure.
Yeah, no, I actually mean the old figure and the Guardian figure and the new figure. So the new figure.
So just to clarify, so people don't know, you're using one, the Ed McGuinness one.
You were also using
the one from Mosaic, the Mosaic. Yeah. Right. John Stewart for the Guardian, and now you're using
that was a custom.
And you're using now the new John Stewart figure from Blackest Night. The Blackest Night figures. I forget which series, but
so it feels to me that the first Ed McGuinness figure was too black. It looked like it was exaggerated. Like, he had like a fat lip or something. It was weird.
Scary black.
Yeah.
Scary black.
Not what I said.
Is that what you want to say?
Okay. Yeah. The mosaic seemed really white. The mosaic seemed like they took a white figure and then just made it sort of blackish.
Or like just non-threatening black man.
Maybe we should get back on the issue.
Let's get back. Can we get back to the issue?
Yeah, we're not too on.
The current figure looks right. Like, it looks like it should.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like a white guy painted black.
Looks like Tyrese to me.
Well, Tyrese is black though.
Tyrese is black.
I know.
Okay, we're getting into okay, how about different discussion that we should
have
discussed. It's as you move back to. I sort of like the fact that Gantlett had to create his own lantern.
He didn't have to, but
I sort of like that he did, just because it shows for whatever reason the limited imagination he has when he created that one box and put a circle in it.
I appreciate that.
He got tired. Look at his little bitty arms.
I appreciate that Bedard is bringing it back to a more manageable level of cosmic power. I mean, I can complain endlessly about the 90s where the Green Lanterns can just rectify their own rings. And when I was reading this, I was kind of like, why can't they just do that? Because all the other guys could just, I mean, Hal Jordan could fucking do that as long as you don't read a Jeff Johns comic. He ran into the Brave and the Bulls, he could just make another ring out of thin air. I appreciate that Tony Bedard's like, let's bring it back down to a manageable level where they're not doing all kinds of cosmic shit, and he's setting up power levels and stuff.
To be fair, real quick.
Something else, this is at least a symbolic gesture that he's putting his all into this decision. He's not like, oh, hey, here's a ring, poof. It's like, I'm going to work hard, I'm going to make my own battery, my own ring, and I'm going to do this something by my hands, you know?
Now Andrew,
because he wanted to say something next.
I do think that maybe Tony should have made a point to mention that Ganthet could do that if he wanted to, but he was choosing to, you know, get his hands a little bit dirty and do it the old-fashioned way, kind of a thing.
Well, wasn't that implied?
I'm fine. It was implied, but it's...
He said, let us issue a ring. It's like, no, screw you, I'll do it on my own.
Yeah, but issue isn't necessarily mean let us make one out of thin air. That just means they give him one.
I mean, yeah, it doesn't.
One of the dead lanterns.
My thing is, I want to say also really quick.
Didn't we see in Sinestro Corps where, like, the rings rolling off a conveyor belt, like, getting made?
Yeah, there was plenty of them.
Well, they show the Green Lantern Corps. They keep trying to show Green Lantern Corps issues where, and Green Lantern Corps is the only one that actually shows these things, where, what's his name? I'm forgetting his name for some reason right now.
Psylocke?
Yeah, Psylocke. When Psylocke was, you know, inspecting the rings being generated after the Sinestro Corps war.
Which is weird, because it's like, were the rings destroyed during
the... Some were being destroyed.
Some were.
Didn't he say that they caused, like, 3 Rotox or whatever to make, or something like that?
Listen, the Guardians of the Universe have plenty of money.
Yeah, but like...
They should never mention money.
He said, that costs money. Like, but, like, what money? Like, they have the willpower.
Symbolically, it costs money.
And, like, no, like, they have the willpower. It's like they have to be paid labor.
Yeah, they pay labor. They have to pay people to create the rings.
Liquefy willpower.
No, because the Quardians make Sinestro's ring, and there's an implication that the rings are made. And I think there was offhand mention that where does Atrocitus get his rings, and we're supposed to find out at some point where Atrocitus gets his rings from, because the Guardians don't make them. They can't just sit around making them, made.
I think the red rings are made out of their own blood or whatever.
No, we saw Atrocitus make his own ring, didn't we?
We saw him make his battery.
We've never seen Atrocitus make his own ring.
Yeah, we saw him make his battery.
We saw him rip out a battery. We saw him dip into blood, and then afterwards come out and I have a ring already.
I think the ring is made of his blood.
More than likely.
I want to say one thing though about Ganthet really quick. I appreciate that. I think I was one of the biggest opponents of Ganthet becoming a Green Lantern because it's just stupid and it just doesn't make any sense. And it's almost as if this story completely ignores Blackest Night to give us an explanation as to why Ganthet would choose to be Green Lantern, you know? And it actually makes a lot of sense here and seems like an interesting character point. And if you'd have told me 3 months ago that Ganthet was to become a Green Lantern, if obviously I'm in a vacuum where there is no Geoff Johns, I would have been like, huh, I'd like to read that story. And then if I read that story and it was this story, I'd be like, okay, I appreciate the idea behind it. And it's interesting to me because what it is an editorial mandate to sell comics, which was shitty. And Tony Bedard's a good enough writer that he kind of went back and made it like a workable concept. Actually, it makes the character have some development. This is the first character I've seen Ganthet exhibit since the Kyle Rayner days.
And I agree with you. The funny thing is the way that I'm looking at this story now, with Ganthet becoming a Guardian, I'm sort of thinking it back as to the Heart Traveling Heroes with Green Lantern with Green Arrow. Yeah. Thinking of this character who had everything given to him. Who's had all this infinite power for such a long time, going into the trenches now, and working together with the common man.
I mean, he's still got infinite power and all.
Oh yeah, of course.
Not a bad comparison.
You know I wanted to mention that I found it hilarious that like if you look at Green Lantern next to Core, especially this month's issues, Green Lantern has about like 13 moments where there's like nobody's talking and it's all like. Dramatic splashy. And stuff. No, like splashy, yes. And it's like supposed to be dramatic, as opposed to Core, which has one like Core is like really wordy, except for one page where it's supposed to be a little bit dramatic, as opposed to Green Lantern, where there's like no words on any pages.
Yeah, and I was annoyed by the dream sequence here because I was like, get out of here, that's too much page space. But the next page, where it's just the little guy sitting there, the bulldog guy getting all upset and about to get grabbed. That page is really good because Kuhn's right. The whole comic was loaded except for this page, and he's a little creeped out.
Like the entire comic was like full of word balloons except for this page, which had like four word balloons on it, and four panels. No, it had four panels and three word balloons.
I wouldn't say it's packed.
mind.
I would say it's packed with horse wounds. I mean, compared to
it's not compared to a
Jeff Johns comic, sure.
Yeah, it actually has a word balloon on every panel. As opposed to this two pages of Green Lantern where there's no words except for on the last panel where there's three word balloons.
Wes, would you have something to say?
I don't like what we got here. That in contrast with Green Lantern, yes, this feels like a issue with more substance. But spending three pages watching this little Smurf bang his little hammer is not interest me. Watching that dream sequence did not interest me. I understand that it's you know, it's a setup issue, and I get that. But
setup and resolution.
Yeah, I wanted something. I felt like that this was a chance to make your mark, and while you proved you have some skill, you didn't really give me something to grasp onto. The page with maybe this is an art thing, but the final page, I didn't get a real big of, oh my God, the Alpha Lanterns are fucking evil, because we've been there before like 30 times over. And
well, the thing
and,
is,
I felt like more the issue once. Needed some action. No.
The thing is, at this point in comics, you're not judged by your first issue, you're judged by your first arc.
Because well, no, I don't think that's true. Because
mostly, a lot of times you're never gonna get just one issue, a story in one issue, especially since like Peter Tomasi's last issue could have been Tony Bedard's first issue. Like if Tony Bedard could have written something similar to that issue to be his first issue, but it's better suited as a Tomasi as the team leaving. But so Tony Bedard has to start off with it's like this is a bit of a bang, but his whole first arc is gonna be it should theoretically more of a bang than just the first issue was.
I agree with West. I like this issue, and I do think that Bedard has a handle on a lot of the characters, but I don't think he knocked out of the park the way he really should have. I mean, not to say it should have had a big action sequence in it, but I think something more concrete should have happened, and I feel like. Especially compared to the last issue of Core, which was really just everybody sitting around talking about what happened. Now everyone's sitting around talking about what's going to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I do think, especially me as someone who's such a big fan of Tomasi and Gleason, I was really looking forward to this to see how it would stand up. And I liked it, not to say that it's not going to be good overall when everything's said and done, but I think he was hampered by too much trying to establish himself. Though, you know what it is? It feels like a good issue in the middle of somebody's run. It doesn't feel like he was trying to show off with the first issue.
Yeah,
that's a problem though,
I agree.
Why is that a problem?
I mean, where he took the entire issue to set up things to come, things that we've already seen, things that we're not invested in, things that aren't necessary to tell right now. Like if you have a Jon Stewart story to tell, tell it. Like don't bullshit us around with things we've seen before. Now we don't know if this is. Editorial coming down on him or Jeff telling him blah blah blah, but if you got a chance to tell a cosmic story, and this is the writer from Rebels, so if you got a chance to tell this cosmic story, don't give me this by the book story of internal investigation going back on the beat cop. We've been there before. Manhunters did that like not, what was that 2 years ago, like what the fuck.
Well, like, yeah.
Didn't he say he wanted to turn it back into the space cop thing? That would be his focus?
Well, yeah. Make it feel like a space cop, but don't, like, at least excite me along the way. Give me something new.
I see what you're saying.
It should have felt like a first issue. It felt like a jab
when it should have been a fucking uppercut.
Again, much like you were trying to say before, it's pretty much a good issue for the middle of someone else's run. So he's pretty much just going off what already came before him. So, basically, we're going to have to see how the rest of this arc actually plays out. We may be surprised. That's what I was trying to say. I know you were. I'm clarifying what everybody's saying here.
Yeah. We're in agreement.
You know, considering the arc, I'm surprised we haven't really expanded more on the Alpha Lanterns being a major part of the arc. We've only mentioned it like once or twice.
I'm happy that they're involved. I'm definitely happy. I just don't want to see the same old with them.
Well, we know where
it's going. The Cyborg Superman's coming up here in a couple of issues.
I think the Alpha Lanterns have done nothing but been shady since they first showed up. And I understand they're supposed to be like the Gestapo and stuff, but I would have liked to have seen one story except for that one two-part Boudicca story by Sterling Gates where the Alpha Lanterns actually do what the Alpha Lanterns are supposed to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it has to be an internal affairs unit.
Yeah, exactly. And we're policing the Green Lanterns, but all we seem to do is execute prisoners and do a bunch of other shady shit for the Guardians. I mean, get possessed by Granny Goodness. You know, like,
the Off-Lanterns were all created for Grant Morrison, you know?
So. Yeah, he created them all, yeah.
I think Bodhika is supposed to be one of the people who's supposed to stick around after the all out.
Yeah, she's a main cast member in Emerald Warriors.
Good. Well, that's going to be. They kind of talked about that this week. I don't know if we talked about it, but they clarified that it's exactly what we thought it was going to be. It's going to be
Emerald Warriors,
a bunch of other guys murdering people for the Guardians across space and stuff like that.
So we're having the corpse.
Yeah, that's it. It's just the corpse.
Exactly.
Except they called it
actually
Emerald
the corpse. Except the whole point of the corpse storyline was that Guy Gardner wouldn't murder anybody, and yet. Not only has he murdered people before, but he will be murdering people shortly.
Actually, wasn't it that it was supposed to be? Wasn't it supposed to be for her in Core, not in Emerald Warriors? Because I remember him saying that there'd be one character that in this arc we'd discover who'd be one of the other characters. It's focused on Alpha Lanterns and with John and Bodhika together. That makes you think, you know, this book.
I think it could be Stell, though.
Stell and Bodhika?
I think. Well, you got that little roll call in the issue. He showed you a bunch of characters that you don't necessarily, you know.
You mean Green Man?
Well, wasn't the deal was we didn't know who was going to be the instructor and then it turned out to be Stell, so I assumed all those kind of questions we had about who was going to be the new regular Green Lantern we saw instead of Kilowog was going to be Stell.
I'm still waiting for Brick. I haven't seen Brick in ages.
Does Stell have a personality?
Stell?
He likes to gamble.
Does he need a personality? He's a fucking robot.
He likes to gamble.
Does he need a personality? He's like a John's character.
So he needs a personality turned out. Hey. Yeah.
Why didn't they make him an Alpha Lantern?
Because he's already robot enough.
I think the new cast member is going to be Glimmer Quip.
You know, it is funny. It is kind of grimy that the Guardians take these people to turn them into Alpha Lanterns and fundamentally alter the genetics, forever making them.
And the best
Green Lantern infused cyborgs, and yet Stell and a couple other members are cyborgs. They didn't pick them. It seems kind of like
the best thing about that is the fact that they said that you know it's going to be just this procedure. You're going to come in here. They didn't even warn them. They just immediately jacked open their organs to ask.
Yeah.
Well, I'm starting to think that at this point that the Alpha Lanterns are sort of turning away from the Guardians.
Well, yeah.
Oh yeah, of course. So... We've been seeing that since Black Knight sort of like began.
At this point, they're already controlled by. Cyborg Superman, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, because
spoilers. One thing about these Alpha Lanterns that it's still very confusing for me is still the fact that these guys were created by the Guardians, and yet the Guardians still, for whatever reason, don't make any mention to these guys.
Yeah, they just ignore them, and they're like, oh, wait a second.
Yeah, they're going to, apparently they'll do what they need to do without us needing to tell them what to do.
And you know one thing I want to make a point to mention? Does it seem to you, like guys, like in this issue, the Guardians seem to have ideologically completely missed the point of Blackest Night? I mean, they're saying things like, we need to be less personal, and we need to step away from people more. And it's like, wasn't that exactly the problem before Blackest Night started? Like,
it seems like Gant's the only one who realizes that.
I thought they made it clear that you shouldn't doubt how they feel after Blackest Night.
Well, in this issue, don't they
but they also said that. They said that coldly. Like, it's, I don't know, it's bullshitting.
As you can tell, it's hard to drill a lesson into an immortal's head.
And he's like, just what we needed most. I was one of the people who was very much so hoping that the end of Blackest Night was going to be the end of the Guardians as the leader of the Green Lantern Corps. But, I mean, obviously that wasn't going to happen because it's a bit too radical, I guess. But,
it would have been better if they just killed them all and just had Granted.
We're still getting that prediction or that prophecy or whatever where Hal has to fight the Guardians and everyone turns against the Guardians.
Pick them off one by one.
Yeah.
Well, they always seem cool. Like with some of the dialogue that they're trying to better themselves, even if it's not fast or easy.
That's what I'm saying. We have had so many storylines where it's like, you guys are dicks, you guys are dicks, you guys are dicks. And then they turn into actual murdering dicks in the last storyline. And they're like, yeah, I guess we can learn our lessons. You know, like, you know, it'd be cool if all the little evil guys in the chain stealing all the ions. I assume they're black. Is that weird? Is that racist?
I assume since they're stealing stuff, they're probably black.
Wouldn't it be cool if there was like 12 of them and they were all just the Guardians? Like it turned out they were all the Guardians? Yeah, but that's not going to happen. Again, too radical and too interesting, I guess. But yeah. I'm really looking forward to seeing that little dude fight Ganton now. I don't know if it's a pathological thing I like where I like watching tiny guys in comics fight, but I don't want to see like little people in dwarves fight. I want to see like tiny guys.
You've been into that since, like, like 2000.
Whatever. Stop time traveling, butter.
So how about Gansett giving up his Blue Guardian status? I mean, is he still got the powers or not?
Are there still Blue Guardians?
It seemed very easy for him to step down from being the Blue guy, the Blue Lantern's Guardian. Especially seeing that none of the Blue Lanterns opposed this at all. They didn't show up and like, hey, wait a second. We're our Guardian.
There's only four Blue Lanterns at all.
Yeah,
why was he even on Oa? Like, what the fuck?
But still, it's like...
He was hanging out with his buddy, dude.
So who's in charge now? And if it's Saint Walker, is it Saint Walker? If it is, like, is someone going to tell him that he's in charge now?
Yeah, someone going to tell him. Saint Walker,
I can't get mad because it's like this isn't Tony Bedard's job to clean up Jeff's.
Actually, as a matter of fact, a lot of the points of this issue brought up the big holes and messes in continuity, especially with this Gansett stuff. My problem is he was in love with Saeed or Sade, and now she looks like she's miserable getting her head sat on by a Larkies, and he's just up here being a Green Lantern. Like, this is what's important right now. My girlfriend can get gang raped by all those orange guys, but I gotta do this.
And he's telling the Guardians how much he's learned about love and stuff. And
refrigerator.
Well, more than likely, this all sought to lead up into some gigantic story arc where he'll fight Agent Orange to a standstill, gaining back the woman he lost.
It's just another classic case of Guardians and Refrigerator Syndrome.
What?
But seriously, then the first thing he's talking to Atrocious and making deals with him, maybe this is part of his deal.
He's not making deals with Larkleys. What deals could he make for Sade?
Exactly! He's not going to give up Sade without a fight.
He makes a deal with Larfleeze, and Larfleeze goes and fights Agent Orange. It makes sense. They're the only two that we have confirmed are staying on Earth.
Wait, did you just say he just makes a deal with Larfleeze and then goes fights Agent Orange?
I meant Atrocitus.
Okay.
Hey, you know something? I think we should talk about the fact that the that word balloon problem we had with Tomasi is still present in this issue.
Huh?
The what?
It's the only location where he would agree to meet and so forth.
I think that some comics need to get over. Yeah.
Anyway. Can I say one of my only gripes with the issue is, like, Gantt's line. It's like, actually, most of these structures are barely a million years old. It's like, maybe three.
Yeah. Tom Calamook made those after he unceremoniously defeated the Justice League.
And you might be like, oh, New Earth, Jeff, whatever. But no, in Secret Origin, you see, like, the actual old Citadel, and it's yellow, and around it's just a bunch of fucking dirt.
So it's a Bedard con?
It's
too soon to jump on that one.
It's just continuity. This is actually just continuity happening, where everything else we've seen in the last few years has been Jeff con. This is actually just continuity.
Yes.
I did like the finer details in the art a little bit, like how nobody except for Ethan Van Sciver would do the whole John Stewart with the, you know, architect thing. Like, you know, how his hair is...
Yeah,
with little lines on him. And I like how Syaf's doing that. And then also, like, when Gantt is making the ring and there's, like, green jizz spilling all over him.
Although I'm a little bit...
Doesn't he need a bubble?
That's one of my favorite moments, really.
No, it's not one of my favorite... Yes, so I like when jizz spills all over Gantt's face.
Well, to say, I enjoyed this issue. Artwork was good. I had no real problem with the artwork that much. I mean, it's new to me, so it's probably gonna grow on me a little bit more. I am missing Gleason's artwork, but the art is for me doing a good solid issue. Again, in the middle of the run of after Tomasi, but. You know, it might grow on me. We'll see how the rest of the arc goes. If it wows us, or if it's disappointing. I'm betting on it wowing me by the end of it.
You know, the artwork, now that I think about it, it was kind of like good 90s artwork.
Which is that's like an oxymoron.
Yeah. No, it was like that little pocket of the good 90s artwork that existed.
I think it looks like passable and serviceable, but that's all it is. I think it's serviceable and passable. No offense to the guy.
So good 90s.
I would not
it's
consider
like,
the 90s.
It's like five built a speech. It doesn't exist.
You know what bothers me about the art?
Kyle's costume? It looks like shit, yeah.
Kyle's hair in this issue was just terrible, guys. It's just like...
It's all wrong.
He should not have scruff.
Not necessarily the symbols being black. It's just like... There's a page on there where John is talking to Boudica or whatever her fucking name is. And the symbol's tilted. It's like he just drew the circle in at the last second.
We're missing a more important symbol incident. The blood incident where the symbol's wrong. We forgot to mention that.
What?
It was actually I meant to mention it in Green Lantern 54, but we forgot to mention that the hope symbol was the fear symbol.
Oh, yeah. They do that kind of shit all the time.
Yeah.
I just thought I'd mention that because I remembered.
And if we want to go back to 54, we can just say Lobo fucking sucks, and I hate that shit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Can we just also really quick say that rhyme at the end almost made me spit at my mother? Like, that's like the worst shit. Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, to be perfectly fair, Lobo is pretty retarded. So...
No. First off, let's not say retarded because because it's America. But like besides that, like,
well, I mean, to be fair, do you really expect Lobo to come up with the best rhyme? Come on, he's not a poet.
Oh, come on, like you're a fucking writer.
Come
and
on,
you
man.
Fucking write.
In bright as day and black as night. Who's up for a big bad fight?
I think if you're gonna say, no, in all fairness though, Lobo's dialogue, as much as I don't necessarily think Keith Gibbon is really good at writing dialogue, his dialogue is like classical Lobo dialogue. And that doesn't mean you need to dumb yourself down. And I don't think it counts as Jeff Johns dumbing himself down. We are talking about the guy whose idea of a one-liner is Icicle saying to Stargirl, "Do you want some ice cream?"
Oh.
It's not a pun, man. You're just asking her for a flavorful treat. Like, that's not a pun.
Do you want some ice cream?
I remember that.
The better joke would be, do you want
some... not even saying, get ready to ice cream or anything like that. He just said, hey, you guys want to have some ice cream? And I attack. It's not a pun.
Do you want that on the
rocks? Arnold Schwarzenegger makes better ice puns.
I'm about to drop the temperature up in this piece. Not a pun.
Icicle in Smallville has came up with better puns.
Yeah, can I?
No, he did not at all.
Do you want some ice cream? Yeah.
Listen, I do not want to hear, hey, I have your fate in my hands. Oh, wait, on my head.
Yeah, that's right, on my head. What a fucking nice slap. Yeah.
Honestly, okay, yeah.
That's right.
I was going to say something, I'm like, screw it, I don't even care.
Anybody see that Frank Quietly picture? That was
Quietly.
The 75th anniversary piece? Yes, Quietly, shut up, and your face. Yeah. The 70th anniversary of the Sinestro versus Hal Jordan. It's pretty sick looking.
I haven't seen it.
It's the Green Lantern 60 variant cover. You can find that on
Twitter.com/GLSpotlight.
Twitter.com/GLSpotlight.
Thank you.
Yeah, you guys should follow us on Twitter and go to the website, because in all fairness, why would you get your fucking Green Lantern information from a bunch of fucking saps who are trying to sell you shit? We'll tell you what's up.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's pretty much it for the episode. I'm glad you all listened to us, you know, on whichever day you want to listen to us. And I hope you'll tune in next time for our other episode of Green Lantern Spotlight podcast.
Yeah, well done.
If you want to find us online, you can go to thegreenlanterncorps.com. If you want to check out the blog, you can find it at glspotlight.wordpress.com. If you want to find us on YouTube, you can go to youtube.com/glspotlight or find us individually at youtube.com/neildoublebane or youtube.com/ssjkuhan. You can find Half the Cast on Twitter at glspotlight, at consciousb, and at kuhan. And also, if you want to find Ryan, you can find him at Avenger Files. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us next week.
Be sure to check out Kirby Crackle, the performance of our opening theme, Room Capacity, at www.kirbycracklemusic.com. Also, check out the Roy Kirkman, the performance of our ending theme, Sector 2814, at www.freewebs.com/RoyClarkMethod.
I have this magic green. It is the color green. It can do anything. Sometimes it speaks to me. It says, how? What have you done with your life? People around you keep dying. Use your will to right the wrong. And don't make us wait for too long.
Eat a dick, bitch.
Hey,
anyways,
hey,
moving on.
Wow.
Whoa.
That's harsh.
I'm sorry.
Wait, I'm saying, I'm sorry. That baby's coming through loud.
Jesus Christ, Eric. Put that fucking kid to bed.
It would make my sense.
I gotta let her run free.
It would make my sense, dude. It would make my sense if you said breasts because it's like, you know, because he's black and 20.
What?
Yeah, wow. It's racist. Stark!
Okay, you can't antagonize him any further because then you're responsible.
Yes!
It's not my fault that he's easy.
It's
Stark! She's officially moving to $3.99?
Apparently.
That's gay.
Wow. Actually, gay. Nothing gay about it, but yeah.
That's stupid.
It's a little heterosexually challenged.
See, it's not like it's going to have sex with other things that are also $3.99.
I don't know, it might.